Für alle ein Fest. Zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Volvic Naturell. 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent. Zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL. 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 Euro. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
I'd ask you to just imagine your own smartphone and the apps that it contains, and what those apps then give you in terms of access to a myriad of information and systems that help you go about your daily life.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
What is the state of the race? Well, you can find out on my State of the Race podcast series. It's a great series I think you're going to enjoy, especially if you like the sort of nerdy, intricate levels of politics and polls and all that. It's a new episode first thing tomorrow morning. You can get it under the Stu Does America feed. Go there now, follow that feed, and it'll just pop right in along with the Stu Does America every day. Check out the YouTube at youtube.com/Stu Does America. We've got this show, we've got the comedy skits, we've got live news reactions, so much more. Just subscribe and hit the bell for notifications when we post something new. Dan Andros is going to be here with the effect of Christians on this election. Donald Trump's stocks and polls are both on the rise. We'll take a look at the latest. But we start by doing the Nazi rally that wasn't. Yes, 20,000 people showed up for a big Nazi party at Madison Square Garden, 20,000 at MSG. Tens of thousands rallied outside. They could have sold the garden twice. While some 20,000 Trump supporters filled Madison Square Garden to capacity on Sunday, many thousands more were turned away, according to law enforcement sources. Estimates on the number of MAGA faithful in Midtown Manhattan varied, but one cop on the scene guessed that another 20,000 were turned away when officials closed the doors to MSG about 4:30, 3 hours before Trump went on. That's dedication right there. It's on television, everybody. I'm glad you had the energy to do that, but caught it on YouTube. Anyway, they could have sold the garden twice, the source said. Pretty interesting. By the way, I have friends who live in New York, and they said, you know, you couldn't get even 2-3 days before the rally actually happened. Long stretches of, you know, 7th Avenue were just blocked off. You couldn't get anywhere near it. Double barricades. Mailboxes were clamped shut so people couldn't put, you know, explosive devices in it. I mean, the security was serious around the city even before the day of the rally. And of course, it increased ever more since then. And it's interesting that they were doing so much to secure a bunch of Nazis, 20,000 Nazis inside. Shameful, MSNBC blasted for splicing Nazi rally clips into coverage of Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. Incitement was the quote. Here's the picture. They actually did this on MSNBC. This is a picture from the German Bund movement from back in the day, the rally that did occur there in 1939. And if you happen to be a GlennBeck.com viewer, a BlazeTV.com subscriber, maybe just listen to Glenn Beck over the years, you may very well know a lot about this particular rally. It was a rally. It was in 1939. It was basically a Nazi-supporting rally, an American Nazi movement that was cropping, you know, kind of just kind of like peering its little evil eyes over the horizon and trying to take foothold in America enough to fill not at Madison Square Garden. It was a pretty serious event. But the reason you know about it from Glenn is because it was a central part of the early 20th century progressive movement. This movement was a part of the progressive movement that was very much in favor of Hitler before he got into the darkest parts of the Holocaust and such. This is earlier than some of that stuff, although, you know, not all of it. 1939, he'd already done a lot of bad stuff. But it was one of those situations where the Americans weren't yet in the war, and progressives very much were trying to shine a light on this. This was a progressive movement, as you know, as you might know by National Socialist Party. I mean, it's not exactly crazy to understand what was going on there, but you should know that that was something that the right side knows about. The left seems to think it's caught on to brand new information. And I just wanted to quickly note, we give a lot of criticism to the left, but we should know when they do good things as well. Now, of course, they were sitting here yelling about how Trump and all of his supporters were Hitler all day. But it has been 42 big days since they tried to kill him Donald Trump. That's, I mean, good job, guys. 42 big days. Wow. I mean, you want to talk about a vacation. 42 days since they tried to shoot the president. And what a wonderful, wonderful job that is. Now, calling Donald Trump a Nazi is a weird closing message. We've talked about this already on the show. We talked about it on radio as well. That's all you got. Like, I don't know what we talked about on radio today. I was on with Pat Gray. We tried to come up with the reasons why you would close with Trump as Hitler, right? Like, especially after you've tried it so many times. You know, I guess, number one could be like you're looking at your messaging and realizing, holy crap, this isn't going to work. Like all the stuff we're doing, the Joy stuff, the J.D. Vance's weird stuff, it's all failed. Let's try the old Nazi stuff. Go back to that. Could be that, you know, they believe they've exhausted any possible inroads they could make to moderate, persuadable voters. They've exhausted that. So let's try to get as many MSNBC viewers out as possible, the type of people that might get excited about Trump as Hitler type of stuff. The other thought is, and this is the darkest one, I'm going to prepare you for it in advance, but I think it has to be put on the table at this point. When you have a president that got shot in the ear, almost murdered in front of our eyes once, and then went golfing and almost got killed again. Your human reaction to that would be to turn the temperature down, right? You just would think, okay, wait a minute. Like, I'm not saying a Democrat is responsible for inspiring these people. The second guy in particular basically was quoting people like Kamala Harris and MSNBC and all these people, Joe Biden on the left, who are trying to say he's Hitler. Like that was basically his motivation. He was outward in public about that. But again, you could say a lot of stuff in political speech and you're protected on that. You're not responsible for other people's violent actions. That being said, normal people who want the best for other people would typically react the same way and say, gosh, you know, like, hey, we were kind of like in a moment of rhetorical flair for a minute. But now that this is, he's actually been shot on stage, almost killed again. Like, let's maybe just leave off on the Trump is Hitler stuff for a little bit. Right. Normal people would do that. At this point, you have to enter into the at least sphere of consideration the fact that they actually want him to get shot. I don't know how else to take this information. The man has almost been murdered twice, at least, in front of our eyes. And your answer is to keep calling him Hitler and up the Hitler rhetoric? Like, I don't know what else to think about that. It makes you believe, I think with good reason, that maybe at least some people in the messaging department over the DNC just are hoping one of their followers, one of their donors, actually succeeds. Prove me wrong on that one, because I don't think it can. By the way, the Nazi claims are cute and everything. And maybe when Donald Trump, with no political history, comes into office 2016, he's running for president at least in 2016. He's a celebrity. He's a businessman, says some stuff that sounds crazy. Maybe in 2016, this could be somewhat persuasive to some voters. I just don't understand who's being pulled to vote for you at this point with the Trump is Hitler nonsense. Like, he's already been president of the United States. He was president of the United States for 4 years. All the things you're saying about him didn't happen. And you're like, well, what about January 6th? Okay, yeah, let's think about January 6th for a minute. What would Hitler do on January 6th? Mike Pence wouldn't certify the election. You know what Hitler does in that situation? He just kills Mike Pence. That's how dictators act in those situations. They call out their military and they start killing people until people stop revolting against them. When they want the Senate, when they want the votes to go their way, it just happens. They make it happen with force. Donald Trump said go peacefully to the Capitol. And, you know, again, I'm not going to defend every one of his actions around that period. You've heard me rant on that, you know, long enough. But at the end of the day, this was a 3-hour delay in the process. And on January 20th, he was out of office just like every other January 20th when it comes to elections. It's not what Hitler does. If Hitler loses an election, lots of people get murdered. So this is just nonsense. Fascists don't just leave the White House eventually. Like, that's not what happens. The DNC is projecting images onto Madison Square Garden saying Trump praised Hitler, which I don't. Is that legal? Can you use other people's buildings as billboards? DNC is admitting this was them. I don't know what the regulations are in New York. I'd be surprised to hear that you're allowed to do that. New York doesn't let you do anything. They don't even let you own weapons in a country with the Second Amendment. So I don't know. I don't understand that at all, but whatever. Then there was this whole part of the Nazi propaganda was a comedian who came up and told a bad joke, a joke that was mean. And we're supposed to think it was mean. Anti-Puerto Rico comments at the Trump rally spur outrage as Bad Bunny supports Harris. I don't know what the second part of that has to do with the first, nor do I know who Bad Bunny is. So I'm just going to ignore the second part of that headline and go with the first one. Here was the joke, by the way. I don't know if you heard, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. I think it's called Puerto Rico. This is Tony Hinchcliffe, host of the Kill Tony podcast. And I don't know if you're like me. I will say this. I follow some stand-up comedians. Like I'll watch a Netflix special here and there. I didn't know who Kill Tony or Tony Hinchcliffe was until, like all of America, seemingly, I watched the Tom Brady roast on Netflix. Now, he was a central character in that roast. In fact, he was probably the harshest of anybody in that entire multiple-hour roast. He was also really, really funny, but he is a roast master. He's a comedian. He's a comedian, not just a comedian. A comedian that makes jokes about stuff is one thing. This guy's doing roasts. The whole point is to say things that are incredibly uncomfortable and offensive. It is not, like, it's supposed to put you in that position where you're like, oh, man. And the whole crowd, by the way, the whole crowd of Nazis, many of which, by the way, carrying Israeli flags, which is a strange thing for a Nazi to do, but we'll get back to that, I guess, later. Many, many of them just reacted the same way everyone reacts at a roast. Oh, that's brutal. Oh, you know, like that type of thing, that reaction, audible reaction. It wasn't like necessarily laughter. That's not what you're going for in a roast. You're looking for that reaction of like almost sorrow that I heard it. That's a roast. That's what he does. Now, the reaction to this has been completely insane. Okay. Of course, Governor Walz, AOC, reacting to the clip, they say, when you have some a-hole calling Puerto Rico floating garbage, know that that's what they think about you. If that's what they think about anyone who makes less money than them. I mean, how dumb and just ham-handed is this? I want every Puerto Rican in Philadelphia and Reading across the country to see this clip. Yes, because, yes, we all know the central hub of Puerto Ricans is Reading, Pennsylvania. What? It's so incredibly stupid. Like, they can't even be obvious enough to turn it to politics, but they have to be like, and here are the cities we want to win votes in, Reading and Philadelphia. Look, it's stupid. You know, it was a joke. It was a joke. Hinchcliffe's reaction. These people have no sense of humor. Wild that the vice presidential candidate would take time out of his quote-unquote busy schedule to analyze a joke, take it out of context to make it seem racist. I love Puerto Rico, and I vacation there. I made fun of everyone. Watch the whole set. I'm a comedian, Tim. Might be time to change your tampon. How dare he go after people who use tampons like that? We can play this dumb game if you wish, but like, this is his shtick. This is what he does. Kill Tony, that's what he's known for. He goes out there and he says the most uncomfortable thing possible. Watch the Tom Brady roast. You will hear it. You will see it. You will probably be offended by it. That is the point of it. Now, you could ask the question of the campaign, whether it's right, a good decision in a high profile moment like that to put a comedian who's known to be being really offensive on stage in the first place. That's really on them, though. That's not on him. I mean, it's his job to go out there and tell jokes. Now, you might go to him and say, look, dude, we need like a super PG performance if you're even capable of such things. Can you handle this? I mean, we love you, but like we can't have some big scandal like this right before the election. And, you know, then it's up to him if he breaks that trust or whatever. You could just not take the risk, although he's got a massive following and, you know, he's got a huge podcast. And I could see why they want to appeal to people who listen to his podcast. So I kind of understand the logic of putting him up there. But maybe you need to have a conversation with him of like what level he's going to. Does he go to level 10? Does he go to level 4? But still, that's really not on him. It's more on them. Beyond that, it just shows how stupid our society is, doesn't it? Aren't we all adults here? We all know that people, we all know this is his shtick. Like, I could sit here and point out correctly that Kamala Harris was on stage with freaking Eminem last week. And Eminem has some of the most misogynist lyrics ever uttered. He has anti-gay lyrics. He has anti-woman. He talks laughingly about beating women in a number of his songs. right? Like, that's what he does. It was his entire rise to stardom. Now, to be fair, does that prove that Americans just want to beat women and want to beat up on gay people? No. I mean, at the time, that is what they knew. At some level, it was a character. Though he did have a significant amount of legal problems, but like they knew at some reason he was expressing it, like expressing as a character his view of these things and wanted to try to. Let's be honest about it, trying to be a badass. He's a white rapper. You got to try something, right? Like, there's got to be something that you try. That's what he tried, and people kind of bought into it, just like they buy into gangster rap. Some of those guys really did have nasty criminal backgrounds. A lot of them were just kind of like people who liked rap. Like that style, kind of went along with it. Wasn't really real. Same thing here. This does not mean he doesn't actually think Puerto Rico is garbage. He, as he said, he vacations there. There's no reason to believe this. These are just people. And like, we are not adults enough to actually have a conversation and understand what we all know to be true. He's just making a stupid joke. This is his job. We know what he does. This is not a random person off the street that they put on there and says things like that. We all know that is exactly what he does every single day. And to score political points, I hope the Puerto Ricans in Reading heard that. It's just so pathetic and ham-handed. And it shows how stupid our society is if they actually buy that. I don't think they do, though. I got to be honest with you. I don't think that sort of stuff wins anybody over, but they're going to try it as well. The other thing is just tying this to the Nazi rally. A lot of stuff has happened at Madison Square Garden, okay? Willis Reed coming through the tunnel, limping, getting out on the court. Knicks win a title. Mark Messier, like, I go back in history, hundreds of concerts. Not every single one of them is a Nazi rally. This is not a building known for its one Nazi rally 100 years ago, or 85 years ago, to be more precise. This is a building that is literally known as the world's most famous arena. They are not known as that arena because of a Nazi rally in 1939. No one believes that. Everyone, with any sense at all, can see immediately through that. Yet they do it anyway. Now, of course, this is, again, I suspect, a way to appeal to the hardcore left-wing MSNBC viewer who's going to believe literally anything you say about Donald Trump. So why not say he's doing it to do? They're like, oh, can you believe he's doing this 85 years after? 85 years after this rally? Huh? What is that a night? I mean, maybe it was 100 years to the day you could make this argument. 85, even if it was just to the day. You can make the argument, 85 years to the day. Can you believe this? That rally happened in February. It's October. These two things have nothing to do with each other. There have been thousands of events at Madison Square Garden, and nobody came out and said, would you believe they held that rally there? Billy Joel has been hosting it every single month. Does he just love Nazis? I mean, and you might say, well, those aren't political events. That's true. However, I do remember one political event back in the 90s that was held at Madison Square Garden. You may have seen the photos. Huh. There is Bill Clinton introducing Al Gore as his vice presidential nominee. That occurred in 1992 at Madison Square Garden, where they had the freaking Democratic convention that year. I don't remember anyone bringing up the rally, even though it was 53 years after. It was 53 years after the Nazi rally. And of course, the Nazi rally was actually tied to progressivism. And nobody brought that up. It is really, really ridiculous. By the way, there's been lots of things that have happened at the Madison Square Garden location. And I don't think that any of this stuff, even the Nazi rally, was really the worst thing that happened there. My thought was in 1998, when the Matthew Broderick Godzilla film was released.
Not this way! Not this way!
All the little baby Godzillas, those aren't dinosaurs, those are baby Godzillas, running through Madison Square Garden. How do you stop them, though? There's only one way. Matthew Broderick's not fast enough. Oh, he knocked some basketballs down, and oh, he, a gumball case, because they're slipping on the gumballs. That might be the worst thing that's ever. And I'm a Matthew Broderick apologist. I actually kind of like that movie a little bit, but I My guess is gumballs wouldn't actually defeat baby Godzillas. That's a different piece of analysis, though. Maybe we'll get into that in a future episode of State of the Race. But I will tell you, we do have some actual election coverage to go to, kind of on the ground. We're going to go to Pennsylvania and see what it looks like in PA with Dan Andros next. So who will win the presidential election? Kalshi is the first and only legal prediction market in the United States. After years of working with the federal government, Kalshi got historical regulatory approval from the CFTC that enabled it to offer a new asset class called event contracts. Now, you know me. I'm a nerd with this stuff. I love my prediction markets. I talk about them to the point you're probably sick of me talking about them. That being said, I've been following this particular project for years as they've been trying to get the government to come along and allow this type of prediction market. Why? It's really important. Like, I mean, I think about this sometimes, and I you know, utilize these markets sometimes this way. You have a situation where, like, you might look at a policy, a tax policy, and you say, this policy is going to affect my small business. And if Donald Trump loses or Kamala Harris loses, whatever you think, this is going to affect my business negatively. Well, you can hedge that with these markets. You can just have fun and predict what you think is going to happen. You know, I get so many people that would always tell me, like, well, I don't believe the polls. And that's cool. It's up to you to not believe the polls. Well, you can put your money where your mouth is. If you think these polls are wrong, you think Donald Trump's going to win by 20, 30 points, go on Kalshi, predict it, and make yourself some money from doing it. Predict whether a future event will happen or not. It's not just politics. They have all sorts of different things that you can predict and profit off of, or hedge risk if that floats your boat as well. I have a lot of fun with this stuff. I can't recommend it enough. Check it out. Kalshi is a great place to go. They have all sorts of different markets. You can predict everything from, you know, stuff on AI and COVID and all sorts of different markets. You can trade with no fees, high liquidity right now on this election. And it's only a week left. So you got to get there, go there, do it right now. It's just so much fun and also just a really cool way to, you know, test your knowledge a little bit. Go for it. I think it's a lot of fun. Check it out. Election markets are currently free right now. Invest in your opinion about who will win. Make trades from $1 to $100 million. And if Elon Musk, you're watching, you want to make a $200 million bet, can't do that right now. I'm sorry. Only up to $100 million. You can also earn a variable 4.05 interest on all your cash and positions. So, hey, get started with a $20 cash bonus. Kalshi will give you a Kalshi credit after your first trade. So join today and go to Kalshi.com/Stu, K-A-L-S-H-I, K-A-L-S-H-I.com/Stu. It's Kalshi.com/Stu. I'm joined now by Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to now wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me, Stu.
I was a little surprised to learn this weekend that the thing known as the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, is actually only known for a Nazi rally. I kind of felt bad for Willis Reed and Patrick Ewing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was chuckling at all the headlines at the media. And even, I mean, Tim Walz kind of said he knew what he was doing. Like, yes, he's coming right, you know, just right on the heels of that rally that happened 85 years ago. Trump just, while it's fresh on everyone's mind, Trump just waltzes on in there and has another Nazi rally. Yeah, I mean, it's almost comical, but I mean, then I remember that this is the party and this is the press of the Binders of Women with Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. who, like him or not, he's a very good man, good family man. And they tried to make him sound like he was some creep who just had binders of women that he was carrying around. It's just like, this is what they do. And so we're yeah. in the last week here. And so they're going to focus full throttle on crazy stuff like trying to tie Trump to a rally that happened, you know, almost 100 years ago.
It's really, really getting egregious, too. Like a couple examples of this. One, a New York Times op-ed that came out yesterday that literally said, Kamala Harris is the only patriotic choice for president. So every Trump voter is unpatriotic. Like, I feel like that's way worse than the basket of deplorables thing from Hillary years ago. And the other one was a Politico alert I got this morning, which just made me laugh. The title was, Who Won the Day? And it just said, Harris, period. Her rallies did not promote racism, period.
What the hell? What is that? Like, that's not even a good text from a liberal friend, let alone a news article.
You have to wonder about the echo chamber. I work at a Christian organization, news organization. We have all Christians in there. And like all of us can still manage to go, well, we sound a little, you know, over the top, a little biased if we do it this way. Like, let's have you considered this? And we have a fraction of the size of the newsrooms that these places like the New York Times have. I literally cannot fathom how some of these headlines get to print when they're just so egregious. They're so in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal that no one's like, guys, do you think maybe that sounds a little... Okay, nope. All right, my bad. Let's just roll with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's what happens there. It's pathetic.
Yeah, it's like you're like, you know, everyone around you is a fan of a certain team, and you're always talking about how you want that team to win, and someone's like, actually, I like another team. And so people are like, wait, what? It's not even like possible. It's like you're about a bunch of like people who went to college and like have retired and are now like donating to the school. And one person's like, actually, I like our main rival. It's like they think it's insane. I saw some of this in the coverage of J.D. Vance over the weekend with Jake Tapper, who I think if you take Donald Trump out of the circumstance completely, is one of the better journalists, I think, out there. Like he does ask tough questions on the other side. He did that throughout the Obama administration. He just has a total blind spot, I feel like, with Donald Trump. He had J.D. Vance on, and let me give you a quick taste of how that interview went.
Ask yourself a basic question about network integrity. You guys talked about the Russia hoax nonstop.
The FBI was investigating
so we
recovered them.
And so you took the words of unnamed FBI agents and put them on your network as if they were the gospel truth. You did it again and again. A viewer of your network would have believed that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin conspired in 2016.
No.
That was totally and preposterously false.
No.
Well, that's
what you just said
why.
Is false. We covered an FBI investigation. I don't know why you want to talk about the FBI investigation.
You covered it in a way that gave credence to anonymous sources' accusations. You did it yourself. Your network did it, Jake. But again, can we talk about the issues that Americans care most about?
I'm talking about things that Donald Trump has said.
Yes.
If you have an issue
Kamala
with
Harris,
whether or not he's talking about the economy enough, that's between you and your running mate. I'm talking about things he has said this week.
Every single rally that he does, he talks about how he wants to unleash American energy so we can lower
the cost.
All right,
you get the point here. This was the tone of this interview the entire time, going back and forth. I mean, I'm all for asking tough questions, but is this really the right approach, Dan?
No, I mean, it is weird because, I mean, even Anderson Cooper, right? Like, he was, I thought, asking some tough questions on Kamala Harris. I saw a lot of people on the right sort of praising Anderson Cooper for, you know, kind of pinning her down on the border stuff. But, you know, and he did it with a normal tone. I think Anderson's good at that. Like, he kind of keeps his tone generally the same. Brett Baer, I felt, was the same way to Kamala Harris. He asked tough questions, but kept it at a civil tone, right? Like, that you can hammer away at the questions. But Tapper in this interview, it just felt like at some point, like, J.D. Vance was insulting his mom or his wife or something like that. It just felt very personal, and it just didn't have to be. And he's not right. And look, J.D. Vance is not wrong about CNN and the Russia story. I mean, they covered that nonstop. It was 24/7 for months and months and months and months. It was a lead story, and they went with that. And there's just no denying that. I mean, everyone who had to go through an airport and were forced to watch CNN saw it. But, you know, no, I don't think it's a smart strategy because, I mean, I think, I know I'm sick of it, but I think a lot of people are generally sick of the media taking a narrative and running with it. And he said it. Let's just talk about the things that people actually care about.
Yeah. Both Anderson and Tapper have had moments of like sort of like this defense of CNN. Like, we're not MSNBC, that type of attitude.
Right.
And I will say at some level, that's true. They're not as bad as CNN. They do have some actual news stories. CNN is bad, but not nearly as bad as MSNBC. But
right.
At some point, you should be able to admit your failures. Like, your network didn't do a good job on that story at all.
No, it didn't. And I mean, look, long time ago, we were in that building, right? And so we saw how it worked. And like, it's interesting though, because there's a shift, right? Like, when we were there, I always like to describe it as what I saw were a lot of liberal people. Many of them were trying to just be journalists, do the news, even commentary, but they're just liberal. So like, that bleeds through, right? The liberal bias, Rush Limbaugh used to always talk about, it would bleed through. You know, there are some activists, right? But now it's shifted and you have like full blown activist media to the point now where they're that's a real wrestle. I think that's probably a wrestle inside of CNN. They're like, no, we don't want to be MSNBC. And then the other half are like, yeah, we need to be MSNBC. We need to pick a side. And I think you're seeing more and more a lean towards, okay, we're actually mouthpieces for this viewpoint now. And we are pushing this worldview rather than journalists who happen to be liberal and it bleeds through.
Mm-hmm. Let me talk to you about the election. You're in Pennsylvania. You're dealing with the swingiest of swing states, maybe the most important state in the union right now is Pennsylvania. You're there. You're in Bucks County, one of the most purplish sort of districts, maybe sort of a preview of what might happen throughout the entire state. What is it like right now living in that environment? I mean, it's got to be nonstop political ads.
Yeah, I mean, well, and J.D. Vance already came right down the road here and did a rally a couple weeks ago. But yeah, absolutely. The local politicians here, you know, just people I know that are kind of into the local politics scene here, they all say that, you know, obviously the election they're saying runs through Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania, they say, runs through Bucks County. And it's very interesting because what they're seeing here in Bucks County is a trend of an increase in Republicans on the voter rolls. But in the last couple elections, that has not, even though there's been an increase in the registrations there, it hasn't translated to an increase of people actually showing up to the polls, which is just a bizarre phenomenon. So Democrats still show up, more of them show up at the polls than the Republicans do, even though the numbers are going up. So we'll see what happens in 2020. I came out and went out to the voting location, made sure I just wanted to go out and actually vote outside just to see, you know, what it was like. And it was huge lines. So we'll see if that's the same way this time around. But, you know, it's certainly a high politics, a lot of ads on the radio right now, a lot of signs everywhere. And I've even seen people, usually you get the signs, but like I've seen the people paid to like hold things and jump around, wear weird things. Like it's all that nonsense is happening around here.
Is it the same people that hold the like 70% off mattress signs and like,
right, you know, yeah,
like those guys?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why they don't just pay for one of those like things that flow in the wind. You know what I was thinking, Stu? We needed to get some Flemlaski Velveeta signs every election. That should be like a Stu show, you know, Stu Does America sort of promotion where we just put Flemlaski Velveeta signs in the middle. When there's like a corner that has like 52 signs, we just put the Flemlaski Velveeta ones up there.
What the heck? Why do I get this idea a week before the election?
I don't know.
I talk to you every day.
I don't know why I just thought of it now. I can't help it when the magic happens. I just have to wait for it to happen, and it happens. So.
Well, look for that promotion in 2028, everybody. It's going to be exciting. Dan bringing that to the table. No, that's a great idea. I would love that. That would make me laugh. Again, it's one of those things, I don't know, it would make us laugh. I don't know that it would do anything to promote the show, but I absolutely love it.
Yeah, it might not. I mean, but we'd at least be satisfied knowing we got people going, who the heck is Velveeta?
Ernie Velveeta. Okay, one more before you go. You mentioned Republicans, maybe in Bucks County, not getting out at the rate of the increase as far as registrations go, which is concerning. But maybe a bigger concern nationwide by a large margin would be a new study that's out that shows potentially 32 million Christians will not come out and vote in this cycle. I mean, that is, regardless of who you're going to vote for, kind of a disturbing statistic.
It is, and it's from the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University, as Barna's, you know, outfit now that he's doing. And yeah, that's the number he came up with. And it said the research, they asked people who indicated they were not likely to vote to explain the reasons for that choice. And the most common reason offered by 2/3 of the non-voters was a, quote, lack of interest in politics and elections. So for whatever reason, that message is just not, it's not, I guess, for all the concerns about Christian nationalism, apparently at the pulpits, they're not urging people to get out and vote because, you know, they obviously took this sample size and then extrapolated it out, number of estimated Christians, and that's how they're getting the 32 million potentially sitting it out based on the percentages that they got in their sample size. And so, because as we know, Stu, it's so close, any little sliver of anything could change this election either way. And so to have that number of Christians out there, obviously who overwhelmingly are going to be probably voting on the Republican side of things, that is that could be a massive game changer depending on how many show up or don't show up.
And I will remind you, of course, there's probably early voting going on wherever you are. I mean, if you are a Christian, I mean, everyone should just go out and vote whether you're Christian or not. But like, it seems like something that's even more to the heart of the future of the country. And if you look at anything that Kamala Harris plans for religious liberty, that's an argument in and of itself. Even if you want to avoid politics, it's not going to avoid you if Kamala Harris gets elected, in my view. So that is a pretty serious situation. By the way, I think it's tomorrow. Early voting starts in Washington, D.C., and your vote always matters, with the possible exception of Washington, D.C., because Kamala Harris is going to win by like 80 points. Okay, Dan Andros, managing editor of CBN News. Be sure to check him out on the Quick Start podcast. CBN's Quick Start podcast, available now. Head over and subscribe today. It's available in your inbox every morning. It's a great podcast. Dan, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Steve.
I'll give you the latest PulseCast update here in a couple of minutes, but I want to give you this first. Trump stock surges as traders predict an election victory. Again, you know, we were just talking about the call sheet markets. There have been a spike in a lot of these prediction markets, many of them overseas, but the call sheet one in particular has also spiked over the past few weeks. Why is that? Trump stock is also going up, certainly cushioning the financial burden that comes along with running a campaign for Trump if he wants to donate his own money. But it's interesting that Trump's percentages look better when it comes to the markets that maybe some of the polls look. People are predicting. They're saying, this is what I think is going to happen. And you know they kind of mean it because they're putting their money where their mouth is, right? Like, we can all say to a pollster, I want this person to win. You might be manipulating the results or whatever. With this, you know, you're putting your money where your mouth is, so probably you believe it. He's surging right now, which is kind of interesting, and it has affected the PulseCast a little bit. When you're talking about like a real spike, the prediction markets are ahead of the polls right now. And we'll see at the end of the day which one is right. But we're getting real measurable, interesting stuff from these markets right now. And to give you just a bit of perspective here, if you go on like some of these overseas gambling sites, you'll see Trump as a -185 favorite. What does that mean? You have to bet $185 to win $100. In other words, you're winning less than even money, right, on the bet. He's the favorite, -185. What that kind of transforms to was, it was actually the exact same odds as the Green Bay-Jacksonville game yesterday, which Green Bay won on the last second field goal, okay? They were both, Green Bay was -185 in that game. They won by 3 points on a last minute field goal. It's basically like if you think about it, NFL standards, it's like a 4-point line. You know, it's a game that you'd say one side is favored, but you wouldn't bet your life on it. It's a close election right now. So Democrats need to find voters wherever they can get them. And where have they found them? Ghost voters? What if we find ghost voters? That's their new pitch to their donors. Hey, we're going to find ghost voters, female ghost voters. Come on, we got we're down in the polls, but ghost voters. Now, who knows? Ghost voters are kind of similar, I guess, to the shy Trump voter phenomenon. They believe some women who aren't normally engaged in politics are going to jump in, I guess, because they want to abort a bunch of kids. I don't know what the draw would be, but they think females are going to jump in as ghost voters. We will see if that's actually true. And finally, I want to do this Washington Post story. Honestly, I was tempted to do the entire monologue on it because I'm fascinated by the reaction on the left from it. The Washington Post basically just said, we're not going to endorse a candidate. And by the way, I believe this should be the standard operating procedure for every newspaper in America. There's no reason. You're supposed to be giving us news. Don't tell us who to vote for. I think it's actually wise, even for the places that endorse Trump. To me, stay out of that. Like, you don't need to endorse candidates. Now, a lot of newspapers have historically done that. The Washington Post has done it for about 40 years. But before that, had a long period where they didn't do it. In fact, it was weird that they started doing it at one point. They have been doing it for a while. They decided they're not going to do it. People are blaming Jeff Bezos for this. Some of the reporting suggests that, you know, these billionaires that own these newspapers who are totally, like, subsidizing a bunch of liberal coverage all the time. Somehow they're now opponents to the liberals because they did one little thing that didn't perfectly please them. Now, if he had said, look, we are going to endorse, and we're going to endorse Donald Trump, they would have gone crazy. Now it's just them not endorsing at all. And think about what they're saying here. The left is saying that they deserve and expect an endorsement from every major journalistic organization in this country. And if they don't, it's the end of democracy. They were putting cartoons in the Washington Post saying the democracy dies in darkness with all this real drama attached to it. You have people canceling their subscriptions, dropping out. Hilariously, Jennifer Rubin, who had just the previous week criticized other LA Times reporters for not dropping out of their jobs, as far as I know, has not jumped out of hers for not endorsing. At the end of the day, this is just so ridiculous, and it shows where these people's minds are. They believe not only do they have to not support Donald Trump, but if they just don't support anyone and just say, look, let our readers decide, they're smart people, even that stance is too conservative for them. Democracy is dead unless you vote for my particular candidate. And if there's anything we all know about democracy, it's a apparently that there should only be one choice. Anytime in life that you have to make a big change, it's hard. And it's especially true when you're buying or selling a home. It can be really complicated. It takes a lot of jumping through hoops. And of course, the stakes are really, really high as far as financial decisions. It's the biggest one you'll ever make. So obviously, you need a real estate agent to help you with all of this. And you don't want just some, ordinary agent who does this on the side. You want the best. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com pairs you with the top selling real estate agents in your area. This is someone who knows the best practices, someone who understands the crazy housing market, someone who's a team leader, a closer, someone, you can trust in these situations because they are massive. I mean, unless you've hit the lottery, your biggest deal you're ever going to have to deal with is buying and selling a home. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go to find the best agent in your town. The name says it all, RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's a free service to you, by the way, so you don't have to worry about, all extra fees or anything. It's got nothing to do with that. It's just RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Polling averages, election models, and prediction markets all encapsulated into the Pulse cast. So the update today, Donald Trump basically is high, 53.98% chance of winning the election. This is a big improvement. We go over this a lot in the State of the Race podcast, by the way, which is coming out tomorrow morning. So make sure to check in for that if you want a full breakdown of that. I also want to highlight one other thing I've been harping on forever. When we did our Senate chalkboard, unlike every other political expert that you saw, I put the Nebraska Senate race in the toss-up category. People were putting it all the way over to likely Republican. I said, no, it's got to be in the toss-ups. Well, we just got finally a nonpartisan poll about this. It's from the New York Times, and it finds that Deb Fischer only leads Dan Osborne, the independent, by 2 freaking points. 2 points! This is a close, close race. Nebraska, I love you. We got to wake up, though, because this guy is not an independent. This is a Democrat. He's getting millions of dollars in funding from Democrats, George Soros organizations. Please tell your friends in Nebraska to wake up. This guy is no independent. He's going to vote like a hardcore leftist if he gets in. Now, election night, we might get that answer. I hope we do. Hopefully it's a good one. If you're going to be with us on Blaze TV, I would love that. If you're already a member, thank you so much. If you're not, well, maybe we can make a move on that one. This is going to be a great election night. We're going to have boots on the ground across the country, correspondents delivering the pulse of the night straight from where the action is happening. All you have to do is subscribe, and you can experience this pivotal night with us at Blaze TV. We spin, nowhere. We don't do the spin. We're out of the spin business. We just want to tell you what's actually going on and, be honest about it. BlazeElection.com/stew. Get $40 off. We'll have that late into the night Blaze election coverage. And then on my side, YouTube.com/stewdoesamerica. We'll go even to the early morning hours on election night. It's coming soon.